episode 267.
His saying was when he was going through this big roller coaster, one of his teammates came up to him and said, "Hey, look, I find in this industry, there's only two emotions, and that's total euphoria or absolute despair. And the lack of sleep enhances both." And I think as business owners, we definitely all share that common experience that, boy, when things are going great, you're just on cloud nine. And when things are going rough, you feel like everything's just falling apart.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Multi-location owner Brian Bates has built a strong culture of leadership and credits it for much of his success. Get ready to listen to his story. This and more coming up. Hey, welcome, aftermarket professionals. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for helping spread the word on the podcast to your industry peers. You're helping spread the education found in every episode. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and if you haven't yet, sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program. Go to fmmotorparts.com. For optimum listening performance, please be sure you've downloaded the podcast listening app. Go to remarkableresults.biz/app or search on the App Store for Remarkable Results Radio. Now, we've just had an iOS update, so be sure you refresh your app in the store. Hey, get social with me at remarkableresults.biz/social, like new Facebook friends Bambi Crozier, David Becker, and Mike Reynolds, and my new LinkedIn connections. Welcome Eric Miller, Greg Unger, and Evan Mahar. Glad to have you on board. Now, meet Brian Bates from Eagle Automotive. Brian owns three shops in Colorado. His headquarters store is in Littleton, and he grew to three branches in just 13 years of ownership. Now, if you're challenged on leadership and culture, Brian is the perfect teacher. And here's your audio lesson. He's built his business based on the relationship he has with his team and how they function as an organization. He says customers can feel that, and it brings a unique differentiation to the marketplace, makes him stand out. The foundation is on integrity and trust of customer and team. He was an early adopter of DVI and has had a business coach since 2008 and is very involved in the NAPA BDG. And he shares some great tips on learning to become a great leader. Find the show notes for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E267. Now, the power of aftermarket stories. Meet Brian Bates from Eagle Automotive. A warm welcome to Brian Bates from Eagle Automotive in Denver, Colorado. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Carm.
No, it's my pleasure. 13 years, three stores. Have you slept at all?
On occasion. It becomes less and less, but you know what I find is that the better people I have, the better I sleep. And you know what? And when I've got some room to grow, then I sleep a little bit less, but it's like Lou Holtz said, quite frankly, when I have better players, I'm a better coach. So I tend to believe in that philosophy.
So let's talk about people and leadership. You work hard finding the right people?
You know, I do. And I think finding them is just the first step. You know, I mean, identifying the people and what their potentials are and making sure that that potential and that person lines up with where you're going as a company is where it all comes together. And then once you've identified that, then taking that opportunity and obligation as a business owner and a leader and maximizing that person's potential, that's, I think, as leaders, if we're truly leaders and that's our calling, that's where we really find our calling and we do the work that we're set out on this earth to do.
Did it all start on day one, or did you stop to realize, listen, I need a good mission, vision, values, I need a purpose, I need a culture? Take me back to the seeds of where you stand today as far as that leadership piece.
The scene of the crime. So we we started out 13 years ago. The funny thing about it is when you start off, you have this mission statement or this idea. And I really think that it's key to make sure that you have firm values, firm principles to run your business on, but also realize that the mission itself or the business model is going to be fluid. You want to be flexible and you want to be able to take advantage of opportunities that come your way, but also make sure that you have a true identity as a company. I mean, if you were running a payphone or a phone booth company back in the 80s and you didn't have that fluidity, you would be out of business right now, or you'd be in the cell phone business and you'd probably be sitting pretty well because you were one of the first comers. So I think really when we started out, it was, yeah, we had the mission. We knew that we wanted to fix cars. We started out thinking that we wanted to be an import Asian specialist. That's where I spent the last 9 years before I bought the shop. And then we realized that our customers really had a wide range of vehicles, and that's where the opportunity was. And we had technicians that were able to work on that. So that kind of changed a little bit. But our core principles and values always revolved around taking the opportunity that's in this industry and saying, there's people that really need someone that they can trust because they don't have the ability or they don't have the time to go through and understand vehicles. And so if you're that person that they can trust, you're doing honest work, you're not trying to just sell them a huge bill of goods and pay the mortgage off of that one vehicle that comes in a month, that these are long-term relationships that people that we started out with 13 years ago, they still come and see us. We have a lot of customers that still come and see us from 13 years ago.
Were you just a natural at this, or did you have to go out and say, I better start reading some books. I better figure out, I have the seeds of being a leader, but how do I become that?
You know, I'm a big fan of Dave Ramsey, and he says, you know, hey, I don't think there's ever been a delivery room where the doctor, you know, spanked the baby. Wah, hey, I think we got a leader here. You know, it's, there are no born leaders. I think people have natural tendencies to being a leader, but really, I think as a leader and a business owner and somebody who can help other people and serve other people through leadership and business ownership, or just being in a position of leadership with a company, there is that need to constantly be a student, constantly be a student of leadership. And I think over the last 20 years that I've just been in the workforce in general, I guess it's been a little more than 20 years now, but I joined the military, and that leadership is much different than business leadership. That's more of a, hey, we've got lives on the line. We don't have time to debate this. We got to move forward. And transitioning into more of a business leadership role, we come into more of the herding cats. We have to have buy-in. We have to have people that are of the like mindset. And then as a leader, you have to take these new ideas because the workforce is changing. The people that we are dealing with that are millennials have a much different mindset than the way we grew up. When we grew up, it was, hey, look, if you don't take advantage of this job, this opportunity, there's five guys standing behind you ready to do it. And you were thankful to have that. So you might put up with some stuff that just didn't seem to be in your same mindset, but you just dealt with it because you knew that somebody else would if you didn't.
Was the military experience good for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always tell people I wouldn't do it again, but given the opportunity and the choice that I made, if I knew then what I know now, I would still have chose to join the military. So that being said, I would not want to go back into the military because I think it was a great experience for me and I didn't want to do it for my entire life, but it certainly shaped me as a leader.
Your biggest takeaway, did you learn anything? Any mentor follow? Did you follow a mentor while you were there?
You know, the biggest thing I learned in the military as far as leadership was seeing or identifying that these were leaders that I really admired And these were leaders that I did not agree with the way that they did things. So there were people there that, and the person that I really admired was the leader that put his team above himself. And the people that I did not admire were the people that put themselves above the team. So I did, that was probably the biggest takeaway I had from the military was take care of your people and they will storm the gates of hell with water pistols for you. You know, if you don't, then you'll have a tough time getting them to take care of you when you know things come to a head.
You said leaders aren't born. When the doctor slaps the baby, can't quite recognize that there's a natural born leader there. So, you know, to our listening audience, if someone said, "I'm inspired by Brian. I love what he's saying. How do I start?"
I think really you have to find those people that have a passion for the leadership style that you have a passion for and then learn from that. So your leadership style may really follow a Zig Ziglar or Brian Tracy or a Sheldon Bowles or a Dave Ramsey. Those, and then what you find is that those people are influenced by other people and they have their circle. And so there's just this wealth of knowledge and information and just philosophy, you know, that you can really lean on. But I think if you don't have a direction or you don't find that person that you really identify with, that you can really just get kind of splintered in a bunch of different directions. So that would be where I would start, is just find that person. And maybe that mentor is the person that works with you. And you start asking them, "Hey, how do you kind of get your fuel for leadership and passion and energy?" And if they're like most great leaders, they're probably getting that fuel from somebody else.
And they're also willing to share, aren't they?
Oh yeah. They're dying to share. They're looking for people that they can share their passion with.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. What are the techs saying about your visit?
Every single time that I set up a training, I try to position the van inside the shop. You know, you're part of their house at that point. Whenever you set aside that time, you tell them that you're coming in, you're providing a lunch, and you're really bringing something of meat and value to the table. Once they get a taste of it, really, by the time you're done, they're asking, "When can you come back?
When can you come back?" Or, "Hey, what else you got in your bag of tricks?"
Exactly, exactly.
So the greatest outcome of your visit to a professional shop
is just to really make a difference in their everyday procedures to maximize the premium end of the product that's being installed. But ultimately, for me being a next shop owner as well, is to maximize their profitability in installing the part right the first time and having a happy customer. I always say happy customer is like a happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. Same thing goes with the customer.
I've heard that before. So you take a Wagner OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
First off, they're floored with the cut design on the front end. They'd never seen a brake pad like this before. And then you start to break it down into why it's cut the way it is and how it's application or platform specific, how the backing plates are no longer painted, they're zinc coated, and that's for tolerance level, so that way you don't have buildup on the ears and fitting into the hardware. I mean, you get into all the little nuances that they've changed around with that brake pad on top of the performance end of it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then once they physically try the brake pad, either on a customer's car or their own vehicle, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about the brake pad.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Are you growing leaders in your company?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the funnest parts of leadership. You know, John Maxwell talks about the five levels of leadership, and level four is growing the next leader. And that's a tough challenge when you find out that there's that level that you go to when you realize that hey, I have to depend on people on my team rather than myself to actually get things done and to be successful. And then you move to that next level where it's, I have to depend on the leaders that are depending on the guys on their team to be successful. And then, of course, the fifth level is the legacy. And that's, you know, those guys like John Maxwell or Dave Ramsey that just give this legacy. And so, for me, every step is just fun and exciting. And it's great to see leaders, in your team that are really thirsting for the knowledge and the growth of leadership and providing that and serving them by sharing your knowledge, because somebody did that for me.
I would say that 98% of the service professionals that I interview have a business coach. Do you?
Absolutely. Yep. I use John Woffler. He's with the Bottom Line Impact Groups, and he's such a wise person and has such a great, perspective on a lot of the problems that we in the automotive field deal with, but not only just in automotive specific, but just running a business and trying to work with people, whether it's customers or people on our team or even family members or something like that. And I think when you're real close to the fire, like we are as owners, it's nice to have somebody that's just, you know, standing a little bit of ways from the fires that has a better perspective, or maybe a less influenced perspective. The smoke isn't quite in their eyes. They can see things a little better.
So how many years have you had a business coach?
I would like to say I've had a leadership coach since I was in the military, since I and even before then, I think that I had some really good people that mentored me. So I've always had somebody there helping me and helping me along the ways. And as far as a business coach, since 2008 is when we joined the Bottom Line Impact Group. So,
you know, there's a lot of guys have told me and ladies, we left our business coach 2 or 3 years later. We went back. We somehow needed the accountability, the discipline that the coach helps us and it forces us to think sometimes way up and outside the box. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I agree. I think you have to have somebody that's going to challenge you, somebody that's going to pat you on the back when you're doing a great job and help you celebrate, and somebody that's going to challenge what you're doing. Are you living up to your potential? Are you working at your potential? And somebody that's going to empathize and let you know that, hey, look, it's going to be okay. This has happened before, or you're going to make it through. Somebody that knows when to say those sorts of things. And that's the power of having somebody else that is there in your corner, and not just somebody that's going to fill you with a bunch of like a superficial sort of response that is just going to make you feel good, that they're feeding your ego versus
quick rather than deep.
Exactly. Yeah.
Got it. I saw a great video of you. You were center stage with Adam Ferreira at the Napa conference, or the convention, I think in 2015, that you were invited to come up on the stage and talk about the shop of tomorrow. What a great video, by the way. Well done. You weren't nervous at all. I mean, you just got up there. You were as good as Adam.
I got to tell you, the guys at Napa, the people in the headquarters, they're probably some of the sharpest business people I've ever met, but so down to earth and so encouraging, and just make you feel like one of the family, like you've just walked back in and met an old friend. And so they did such a great job at coaching me and helping me through and helping me prepare, that once I walked up on the stage, I was nervous, but I didn't have anything to be nervous about because I was so confident that everything was going to work out. So kudos to the guys at Napa, man. They are just awesome.
Well, I'll tell our listener that I'll publish the YouTube link on Brian's homepage or his show notes page. I don't know exactly what episode it's going to be, but we'll do our best to promote it so people can watch you talk about the shop of tomorrow. And a big piece of your discussion was DVI and how way back in 2015, it was had big impact on your business. Now here we are, 2017. What's happened since then?
back in 2014 in our 20 group with RLO training, we had talked about digital inspections, and they were sort of this thing that, well, the dealers are starting to come out with them, and there's a good opportunity here to increase communication with your customers and build that trust through communication. And then the next year, I had the opportunity to work when I was on the NAPA Auto Care Council. We had the opportunity to interview a couple of different inspection programs, and we felt like the one that they chose with Auto Vitals was the best one. But we helped develop that, and man, what an impact it has with your customers on being able to really increase the amount of trust, the communication between the advisor and the technician, so that that comes through as a solid communication understanding with the customer as well. So, and I think when it's all said and done, the better job you do, then the better numbers you put on the board. The numbers in dollar sense is just a way to keep score. How well are you serving your customer? And when you do a good job at doing that and giving them the understanding and building that trust, then you're rewarded with certificates of appreciation in the form of, you know, dollar bills. So that's really what I look at, is if we're profitable, what are we doing really well? If we're struggling for profitability, are we doing the best job we can at serving our customers? And generally, they're pretty hand in hand. You know, I mean, if you're doing really well, you're doing a great job serving your customers. And if you're struggling, there's probably some areas that you can improve on dealing with customers or serving your team members or your business model, that sort of thing. But
back in 2015, on the video, you said we had a substantial increase in ARO. I think you told me that you were pretty happy with the 350 that you were getting. Where are you now?
We're right at about 550 on average. We have some months where we're at 650, some months at 450. But overall, the last time I looked at the year to date, we're at about 550, which I think is pretty respectable. And again, a lot of that is just making sure that we're communicating with the customer on all sorts of levels, but also having great people in place.
How big was the adoptability or adaptability piece with your team? Some guys have told me, hey, this is our program. This is what we're doing. Let's get with it. Let's make it happen. Some guys have said, well, some of my techs are taking some time to warm up to this. How did it go for you?
Well, my strategy with a lot of the innovation that we use when we do see an opportunity to innovate is twofold. One is we want to run a test balloon and see how well it runs. We want to make sure that it's somebody that we know can be successful, that they have they're a high performer. So we take our shop foreman and we say, and with the digital inspection, we said, hey, take this program and start using it. You're going to be the only person that's going to use it. And then tell us whether you like it or not, what sort of problems there are. That way we're not creating this huge mass confusion and chaos and whatnot situation. So once he starts using it and we have confidence that it is something that we're going to adapt or adopt in our shop, then we start creating excitement amongst the rest of the team players. So we have one advisor, one technician doing it, and then the curiosity starts to form. And then it seems natural that the next step is the other guys want to join on board. If it doesn't work out, then we know we don't have to unwind a whole bunch of stuff. We just say, okay, let's go back to the old way. As far as getting the technicians to adapt fully, there were definitely some bumps in the road. There were some disagreements. There was a couple shouting matches amongst technicians, and I thought, well, that's odd. They're obviously passionate because they're out there having a huge argument about this inspection process, which is awesome. You want that. You want that passion, but you do want it to be focused and funneled in a positive direction. But we had that movement there. They finally worked out a lot of the details, and they all were wanting to go in the same direction. It was just a little bit of a difference in how they were going to get there. And now you talk to the guys, all the technicians in all three stores, and they wouldn't go back to the paper system for nothing. I mean, they fully embrace it. They think it's way better, way faster, way more effective than doing the paper.
Okay, you just mentioned some great things. There are benefits that come from implementing the system. Do your people, do your techs especially, appreciate the value it brings to your customer?
Oh, I think so. I think it works on a ton of different levels, that they can take a picture of something and that is communicated to an advisor. And that process of inspecting a vehicle and getting what is actually happening on a person's vehicle and communicating that to a customer, it's complex. It's more complex than it seems on the surface because of the people factor. You have to have that trust. You have to have the trust from the customer to know that the advisor is telling them the truth in their own interest, in their best interest. You have to have the trust from the advisor that he's going to be conveying information that's not going to make him look foolish or dishonest. And then you have to have the trust from the technician that if he goes through all this work of filling out an inspection, doing a quality inspection, that it's truly going to be presented to a customer and that that customer is going to appreciate it and give you the opportunity to take care of those repairs for them. So getting all those things working together can be frustrating at times, or it can feel like it's really easy, but having that core piece of a communication tool like the digital inspection is definitely powerful, and it makes that job a lot easier because seeing is believing sort of a mentality.
Well said. Thank you. Whose DVI do you use?
We use AutoVitals. And I think there's a lot of great DVI tools out there. And I feel the same about a lot of these tools that I feel about coaches. You know, whatever you find that works for you, then use it. But find something that works for you. If the coach that you really identify with is from a certain company, then use that. But going without a coach, in my mind, is foolish. Going without a set of peers, it's tough to do this on our own. The automotive industry is a rough industry. It's complicated. It's very competitive, and it's constantly changing. It's not like the floral business where, I mean, he has probably been the same since the 30s.
Oh, wait a minute. A rose is a rose is a rose.
That's right. I mean, you might have some innovation, but the core rose hasn't changed over the last, you know, 50 years like the car has. So staying on top of that and staying in business and viable is important, and having a peer group and a coach is a big part of that. And then making sure, and the reason why that's important, because you come across these tools. One of the tools that we're looking at right now is the texting tool. How do you use this powerful device that is so much a part of people's lives? I mean, people, I think, now would rather text than talk on the phone. It's just easier. It's quicker. But they are very sensitive to the abuse of that text, and you can lose trust and lose loyalty very quickly if you abuse that. So making sure that you're serving the customer without abusing them, using communication tools and the cutting edge, and making sure that you're competitive in the marketplace as a business, but also making sure that you're not going out there and being somebody that you're not meaning, that you don't want to market and abuse somebody and spam somebody.
I agree. Texting, I can almost see in the future, Brian, texting etiquette classes. I mean, you really have a chance to get inside the pocket, in the mind, in the hand of someone so quickly. And I guess once the car communications, the service repair is done, I guess since you did have the mobile number and you decided to text someone a special that you were having, that may not be accepted as nicely as it was during the day. My car's in for repair. I expect to be texted back and forth to know what's going on. But after that, please don't take the liberty. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I think that changes for each person that you're dealing with. So for me, I have a certain group of businesses that I really want to know when something is going on. If it's, you know, I subscribe to the movie theater text because I want to know what the latest movies are out there. A clothing store that I buy my clothes from, I want to know when a particular item is on clearance or they're having a special so that I can take opportunities with that.
It really goes into permission marketing, really. I mean, if you collect the mobile number, and you tell your customer, hey, listen, if something really big is going on here, we're having a women's car care clinic, something really big is going on, can we tell you about it? And if they say yes, you've got permission.
Exactly. And if they say no, then you respect that and say, okay, well, then there's that second level of transactional communication. Hey, is it okay while we're doing a transaction? Can we text and communicate, but we're not going to spam you? You know, it's funny. 10 years ago, maybe not even that long ago, asking for somebody's email, I think you'd have a better chance at getting their social security number and their credit card than asking for their email. And we used to come up with all these just ways to kind of really soften the blow or explain or whatever. Nowadays, the answer is just ask them. Or what's your email address? And they give it to you just like they would their phone number.
It's second nature because people want to communicate that way. And I think it's becoming secondary to texting, though, in certain situations. I agree with you. Speaking of technology, what's the latest piece of equipment you may have purchased?
From a tool standpoint, our latest technology purchase has been more laptop-based scan tools. We've purchased a Launch. We've purchased the Mall. We purchased the Altel Maxis. And so having three different stores, and they're all 5 miles apart from each other, so it gives us a pretty good advantage that we can purchase three different scan tools, but all of them are shared by all three of the stores. As far as a business tool, you know, the best thing that we've purchased recently has really been our VoIP system. And owning multiple stores always, well, not always, but I think it for us, it really gives us opportunities to magnify our strength by numbers, but also creates more complications. In having that system where we can interconnect all three of our stores has been probably the best business tool. Aside from that, you know, software, whatnot, there's always a debate about the best repair order software, that sort of thing. My philosophy has always been, hey, we're here to fix cars. You can chase the rainbow with a bunch of different devices. Staying on the cutting edge of some of the communication technologies or the marketing technologies is great. But when it comes down to repair order software, find that one that really fits your business the best. It's not going to be perfect. And then fix cars, you know, just get down to business and fix cars and serve people. And don't create that chaos of changing from this to that to the other.
Branch stores, would you ever not do it if you had a chance to redo it?
No. I think that my personality makeup, the way I'm wired, just is not the kind of person that's not going to stay put.
So branch 4, when?
When branch 3, 2, and 1 come together and are working the way I want them to. It's been a huge challenge. Like going into the first store, you're really sure that things are going to work out, but you know that there's going to be some things that hit you and that you're not going to be prepared for.
Give me an idea of not being prepared for. Give me a great memory of a stumble when you were expanding.
The first stumble that we kind of knew we were going to see, and it comes down to allowing the people that are working on your team to make mistakes, but not allowing it to get out of hand. Because we learn by making mistakes. And one of my favorite sayings is that pain is a great teacher. You know, when you feel that pain, you remember those things. But we started out with our second store, then the first store took a pretty good dip. And it was just that taking the training wheels off and letting it go. And a lot of guys have that. We expected that to a certain degree. But we weren't prepared, or we were hoping that it would. It really was planned for the worst, hope for the best sort of deal. With the third store, we didn't really expect that it was going to take as long as it did to get the store's numbers to where they wanted to be. We knew that the store had been run by some bad operators in the past. And so we underestimated how much it was going to take to turn that store around.
Wait a minute. I think you just broke the code for me. You didn't go like a brownfield and put up a building or buy an empty place. You took over a going concern.
Well, the first store was a going concern. The second store had only been closed for a couple of months. It was a former Goodyear. So it did still have traffic coming through the door, people that didn't realize that it had closed. The third store had been run poorly for several years, did go out of business, and it was closed for about a year and a half. And I underestimated how much energy and work it was going to take to get that momentum going up again.
What would you do differently?
Nothing, honestly. I think we did everything right. I think the choice at the time, the best choice was to take a business that wasn't ran properly, because there was a great opportunity there. But really the choice is, do you take over an ongoing concern, somebody that is running a thriving business, or and pay that blue sky, or do you take something that is not running at all, not pay the blue sky, but invest that money? And I think it's an even trade-off unless you come out ahead. So man, I don't look back and say too many times that I've made a bad, or I wouldn't do that again.
I think of your marketing efforts to corral the customer in the door, or to have a chance to find the new type customer that fits your model, your culture. Was that long time coming?
Yeah, I think in all three stores, what we have experienced is that the first set of customers, or the group of customers that come through, there's a lot of frogs and a few princes in there, you know, and so you end up kissing a lot of frogs. But once you find those really good customers, holding on and retaining them, and those great customers, they're like eagles, you know, they don't flock. You don't just get them coming in and flocks. You find them one at a time. And then as your business grows, then you hold on to those great customers, you retain them, and then they start building, you start generating that momentum, the cash flow that you need to run a healthy organization, a healthy business. And that's really, when you look at your marketing, you want stuff that's designed at attracting quality customers, but you also have to realize that there's going to be some people that show up to your door, and they're not going to be the kind of people that you want to do business with. But you got to know that you're doing everything at a high level, and that it's not a leadership or an operational failure. It's just a mismatch of customers' expectation and your expectations. One of my favorite books is The Pumpkin Plan by Mike Michalowicz. I don't know if you've ever read that, but it just talks about these, it analogizes how businesses and customers, they're kind of like a pumpkin that you're growing, this huge giant pumpkin. And as that pumpkin starts out growing, you see little pumpkins, but eventually you start seeing that some of those pumpkins are getting bigger and bigger, and some of them are not growing so well. So Mike talks about extracting, you know, gently not firing a customer, but just, you know, removing that customer very gently and respectfully. You don't want to tell a customer, hey, look, I don't want to do business with you anymore. You just want to gently push them out, you know, find them a new home, or allow them to find a better company to do business with. And then focus all your attention on those great customers, because the customers that aren't really a fit for your business, they're just taking resources, and those resources would be better spent taking care of your good customers. So that book really does a great job at analogizing, and he calls it the pumpkin plan. And it's just this plan about growing great customers, and really, you know, respectfully and with dignity, pushing those other customers that aren't a good fit out of your business model.
When you and I spoke last, you told me about a book from Ben Horowitz, The Hard Thing About the Hard Thing, right?
Right.
And you gave me a quote from that book that I just was knocked over by. Can you tell us about it?
Ben's a very successful multi, I think he's a billionaire at this point, but that book is awesome because the reason why I like it is because it really talks about people and treating people with dignity, because he was a tech entrepreneur and he was going through these wild swings that he had to hire a ton of people to really stay on the cutting edge. But then when the market started crashing, he had to draw back to his core people. And he was just going through this wild ride. And one of the guys came up to him, one of his team members, his co-founders or on his executive board, said, "Hey, Ben, don't worry. It's always darkest just before it goes pitch black." So his saying was, when he was going through this big roller coaster, one of his teammates came up to him and said, "Hey, look, I find in this industry, there's only two emotions, and that's total euphoria or absolute despair. And the lack of sleep enhances both." And I think as business owners, we definitely all share that common experience that, boy, when things are going great, you're just on cloud nine. And when things are going rough, you feel like everything's just falling apart. And,
and I've also learned that, when things are going really great, just wait, because things will start going really bad again. But it's never going to be final, and things will get good again. And if you can get that temper that in the middle going, then you won't, overly get too excited about the good times, and you won't be in total despair when it's the bad times. And I get that. And that's important in life, personal, business. And great stuff. Thank you so much. You were just talking about retention. You got a great retention tactic you can share with us?
The best retention tactic, I feel, is making sure that we're creating a relationship with a customer that they feel like we're truly serving them. And that's that servant selling, that we look at it and we say, "Hey, look, this is what you're trying to achieve." Whether it's, "I need to turn this lease in 2 years and not get hit real hard on it, or I want to keep this car for the next 10 years and get 400,000 miles out of it." Understanding that and having that customer come in and say, "You know what? These people really care about me. And yeah, they're taking my money, or I'm spending money with them, but in the end, I spend money with them versus somebody else because they care about me." And when they have that interaction with your staff, that's where it should come across. There's a lot of different methods of selling, all the way from the bottom, which is coercive selling, "You better do this or your car is going to catch on fire," all the way to the top and the most noble, which is, "I want to serve you as a person. And I understand if I do that well, then I will get to where I want to go in life as well." So, and then everything else that we use as far as marketing revolves around that philosophy. How can we serve that customer and give them the information, the advice, and the education, and wrap our arms around them so that they feel like we're not wrapping our arms around their throat, but we're actually wrapping them up in a nice warm blanket so that they feel comfortable about doing business with us.
Brian, do you find time to just think?
When you ask that question, the first thing that comes to my mind is, do you have time to grow and learn? And that's what I think thinking is all about. So not fighting fires, not working through problems, but just growing and learning. And I do. And the fun part about that is that it re-energizes you. And
so what happens when you get a giant thought?
I have to think, what would my wife say if I ran this past her, right? And then I'll know if it's a great idea. But I always know that she has seen this. We've been married for 25 years. So
congrats.
Thank you. She's seen that look in my eyes before. And I think the nice thing about the relationship that we have, it's that same relationship I look for with anybody on my team, is that there's the challenge and the questioning and making sure that you are very thoughtful and you've had a well thought out and idea, plan, that sort of thing, but also allowing you to go forward if you truly want to. So she's done a good job at tempering me when I'm too excited and making me see some of the stuff that maybe I hadn't thought about, but also having the trust in me and saying, okay, if you really want to do it, if you really want to buy a third store, then you go for it, that sort of thing.
It's great to have heard about the relationship and the reliability you have on your wife. Does she help keep you grounded?
Oh, definitely. Yep. And she also inspires me too, and encourages mm-hmm. me when I'm you know, having a rough day. Yeah. So and vice versa. And that's not just her, it's everybody on our team. That I think the biggest opportunity we have as businesses to distinguish ourselves from our competition is really in that relationship you have with the other people on your team and how you function as an organization. Because you wouldn't think so, but customers feel that when they walk in the door. They can feel a dysfunction or they can feel a happy team. And I can feel it when I walk through. When you walk up to an airport counter, ticket counter, you can tell whether people are working together and they're excited, they're having a good time, or whether these people are just miserable and you feel bad for them because you're going, oh man, I'd hate to be in that situation. And as a customer, you go, you know, I don't know if I want to do business with this versus the people that are having fun, enjoying, and getting stuff done.
How true, how true. So you got family in the business. Your son works with you.
He does. He's the SOB, the son of the boss.
Yeah, I know that term. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy, he's got a ton of potential. He's a great, great person. I try to avoid using the word kid. He's 23 years old, so he's not a kid anymore, but I still think of him as my little buddy that's, you know, going out to the store with me to, you know, ride in the truck, or, you know, it's fun. He's got a ton of potential and a ton of great ideas and a good work ethic and a great personality. And so he's having fun working in the business and growing as a person. And
well, one day I'm going to ask you to come back and we're going to talk about succession planning, because you've got to be thinking of that. Even though your son Adam's 23, you've got to one day think, you know, I don't want to push it too far, but maybe in 5 years, we have to look long term.
Right. You know, it's a great question. And I think, at least with my business, I want to create an opportunity for both my son and my daughter. My daughter's in college right now, but she wants to be a guide. She's an outdoor adventure education. And so that's one of her dreams, that one day she owns a business. And I think that me having a good succession plan for my business will definitely open the opportunities for her to get into that business. But I've also seen with a lot of parents that own auto repair shops that one of my good friends, Randy Pickering, his son is a great example. He went off to golf pro school and he wanted to be a golf pro. And so Randy fully supported him, and his other son wanted to be an accountant, and his daughter Taylor Pickering, who just won a ton of awards at the Ratchet and Wrench conference, she wanted to go into marketing. And all three of these siblings went in different directions. They all came back to the business, even though they didn't intend to start there or to end up there. They started in different directions. So allowing my daughter to do what she wants to do, but still keeping that opportunity if she wanted to come back to the business. And the same with my son. If he wants to go out and adventure in a different field or a different industry, that he has the opportunity to do that. And he's really a sales mentality kind of person. He's very high eye. He loves to socialize, interact, not as organized as I'd like him to be, but neither am I. So I think that my opportunity really is to either create that opportunity for my kids to expand into their own path, or to give the opportunity to have a kind of a jump start in this industry if they want to take over my business. So I haven't made that decision, but I know if I'm working in the right direction and I have a plan to sell the business. If they want to take the opportunity to buy it from me, great. If they don't, then we'll I'll utilize my plan moving forward for my retirement and to help them with their lives. Yeah.
Great advice. Thank you for opening up and sharing that. You've been very transparent, Brian Bates, Eagle Automotive in Denver, Colorado. Any great words to live by that you you have hanging on the wall?
Some of my friends and I, we went to the Dave Ramsey conference in May in Orlando, and if you're passionate about leadership, Dave brings together some great people in these conferences, and it's relatively inexpensive. I mean, he does a good job everywhere. The Ramsey organization is an awesome organization. He had Lou Holtz there, and if you've ever watched Lou Holtz on YouTube, I mean, he'll make you want to jump up and down in front of your laptop in your living room. But seeing him in person was just amazing. And it's the second time I've seen Lou talk in person. The first time was about 96 or 97. So it's been about 20 years. He hasn't changed a whole lot. But he talked about the three things when he was a coach and just in life in general that he lives by. And I think that since then, I think I've always lived by it, but it really clarified and solidified it for me after listening to him. It is that you have to trust the people that are in your life. You have to know that they are 100% committed to excellence, and you have to know that they care about people. And so I was talking to another friend of mine, and I was telling him about that, and it was TCL was trust, commitment, and love. And he says, no, it's TLC. I can remember that. TLC is trust, love, and commitment. And that really is what I strive for. I know that if I can trust the person that I'm working with, if they truly care about me and I truly care about them, and we're both committed to 100% excellence, giving 100% every day that we walk in the door, then that's where we're going to find success. And that's where we found success up to this point, and that's where we'll find success in the future.
Brian, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thank you, Carm. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks, Brian Bates from Eagle Automotive in Littleton, Colorado. I love to hear stories on the value that culture and leadership brings to team and customer. A fine example on how to build family. Get the episode's talking points and also a link to Brian's YouTube video when he spoke at the NAPA convention in 2015 on the Shop of the Future. It's on his show notes page, remarkableresults.biz/E267. So glad you invested in this powerful story, because through storytelling, I'm helping aftermarket professionals achieve remarkable results. Hey, we'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.